David Appleyard Soberbridge asks, can you convince me that you are the person that Theresa May would least like to face at the next general election? You have 40 seconds.
Well, yes, I think I can. I think I'm the person who's got the ideas in this debate. I think I'm the person who's got the energy in this debate. And I think I see very clearly that we've not been what we need to be in recent months, which is a powerful, credible opposition to the Tory party. They're riding roughshod over us. We've left Europe. We've got an NHS that is practically bankrupt. They're destroying Labour's legacy, ruining our sure start, overcrowding our schools. And we've got to carry the fight to the Tories much more vigorously than we've done in recent months. And I demonstrated in the way in which I fought the tax credits issue and turned it, in the way in which I fought the cuts to disabled people, I know how to fight these Tories,
Smith,
and I know how to win.
Thank you very much. Jeremy Corbyn, can you convince David Appleyard that you're the person that Theresa May would least like to face at the next general election?
Thanks, David. Thanks for your question. Theresa May is a Tory Prime Minister. Theresa May is likely to be presiding over a bargain basement economy that's going to attack all of our rights, our living standards and all of our public services. She doesn't understand the strength of ordinary people's feelings all over the country, which is why I've tried to change Prime Minister's question time around from a public school theatre into asking the questions that are put to me by ordinary people all over this country. I think it's important to do that. I think we can put it to her that what she's doing is wrong, and in the past 10 months we've defeated the government 22 times in Parliament. When we work together, we win. When we work together, we do defeat the Tories.
Thank you very much. I'll open it up for debate. Owen Smith, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think the problem with that, Jeremy, is we're not defeating the Tories. We've had a few victories. We've done relatively well on a few occasions. But we're behind. We're behind. You just pick up the papers today. We're 14 percentage points behind the Tories under Theresa May. 2 million Labour voters think they would prefer Theresa May to Jeremy Corbyn as the Prime Minister of this country. Now, that has got to be a wake-up call for us all. You can't be satisfied with that. I'm not satisfied with that. You know, I'm pleased that we won on PIP. I'm pleased that we won on tax credits. But I don't think that's sufficient. I want us to be looked at by the country as a credible, respected opposition and a Labour government in waiting. I know you're radical. I'm radical, but I want us to be radical in government, not radical in protesting against the Tories. Owen.
In the 10 months since the last leadership election, we have defeated the Tories many times, and you and I worked together to ensure that that happened, and I was very happy to do that. We won all four by-elections, three with a big swing to Labour. We won four mayoral contests. We picked up a lot on we picked up a lot of support over the general election of 2015. And so I think as an opposition, we've done very well. We were ahead in May. Then came the wave of resignations. Then came the threat to unity in the party, and that is what has put us behind in the polls. So, come the Owen, I honestly believe that come the end of this contest, you and I are going to be able to work together in Parliament in order to put forward a decent anti-austerity strategy, even stronger than we've been able to mount so far, because the party, I hope, will unite around an economic strategy which is about investment to protect and create jobs, which is about showing just exactly what the Tories are about. And that way, we can use this massive membership we've got to defeat the Tories and win a general election.
We agree that we need a united Labour Party. We absolutely need that, because disunited parties lose elections. But we have never looked more disunited than we've looked under your leadership. We've never looked more disunited. A part of the reason we are so disunited is we are losing. We lost in the local government elections. 18 seats. The Tories at the same point in the cycle won 300 seats. Ed Miliband at this point in the cycle was 9 percentage points ahead. We're 14 points behind. UKIP here in Wales won 7 seats. It's a disgrace we've got UKIP in our National Assembly here in Wales on your watch, on our watch. We're third in Scotland behind the Tories. This is not success, Jeremy. And on current trajectory, we will be down at 22% at the next election in 2020 under your leadership. Now, you cannot want that because you want a Labour government. You want to put into practice our principles. You don't just want to protest about it, I hope. You want to actually deliver something for this country. And for
Jeremy
me,
Corbyn,
that means winning. It doesn't mean trading our principles. It means winning to put them into practice. That's what we've got to do. We're a Labour government in waiting, not a protest movement.
Right, I want to invite Jeremy Corbyn to respond to that, please.
You and I were at the same shadow cabinet table when we agreed on the strategy we were going to do in the House. We agreed on where we were going to take it to the Tories, and we had a significant number of victories. And we did defeat the Tories in the May elections. I wished it had been by more, but we were ahead of them at the end of it. And the party is growing massively in membership. That must show something. What I don't understand is how you can complain about disunity in the party when you and others are the ones who resigned from the shadow cabinet. At the very point when we could have taken it to them.
Jeremy, I'm not having that because you know, Jeremy, that I wasn't part of any coup in the Labour Party. Resigned from the shadow cabinet on that Sunday. I went.
Can you
to
please?
See you,
we
Jeremy.
Want to hear from the candidates.
I went
and in
to
fairness
see you,
to both.
Jeremy, and you know that I came to see you to say, not can I resign, but to say, how do we get out of this problem? You knew that we had a no confidence vote in you coming that evening. You knew that many of my colleagues who didn't ring me and ask me to resign had resigned on that Sunday. Now, I went to Jeremy and I said very clearly, Jeremy, how are we going to get out of this? I've served in your shadow cabinet with loyalty. I've helped you win those victories on PIP and tax credits. But you've got to do something to save the Labour Party, because at the moment we face the prospect of an historic split in the Labour Party. And Jeremy, you couldn't answer that question. You didn't have an answer as to how we were going to forge better relations in the party. You simply said, let's have an election. You simply said, I've got a big mandate. Now, John McDonnell, he was very clearly happy to split this party. He said as much in that meeting. And I'm not standing by and see the Labour Party split while I've got the blood in my veins to fight for it. I'm just not doing it.
John McDonnell has been an MP since 1997. He won a seat off the Tories. He's now made it into a very strong Labour seat. And at that interesting discussion that you and I had about the future direction of the party, you concluded it by offering me unopposed election to a position that doesn't exist as president of the party and invited me to step aside. I pointed out, yes, there were problems in the parliamentary Labour Party, and I think you would also concede that I appointed a shadow cabinet that reached out a long way in the party, way beyond the politics that I'd adopted beforehand. And surely the best thing is for us to recognise what is happening in this country and work together to defeat the Tory party, not indulge in what we're doing now.
Okay, I'm going to bring it to a close there because, in fairness, Owen Smith, you did open, and I'm sure we'll revisit a lot of those topics with the next question, in fact. This comes from John Bath in London, and you'll have 40 seconds again to summarise your answer to this and then go on to debate. Jeremy Corbyn, you'll be answering first. Do you think that in order to be an effective leader of the Labour Party, the leader of the party needs to have the support of a majority of the Labour members of Parliament?
It would be a good thing if Labour MPs got behind their leader and worked with them rather than briefed against them all the time. I understand political differences and I understand dissent. I understand that because I practice political differences and dissent myself, as everybody is very well aware. But personal abuse is simply not acceptable. Endlessly personally briefing against people is not acceptable. An effective leader of the Labour Party must have the support of party members and affiliates, and I think members of Parliament should recognise that the structure of our party has changed, and I had last year a very strong democratic mandate to try and change things in this country, and I believe we have changed
much.
Politics in
Jeremy
this country.
Corbyn. Thank you very much. Owen Smith, the same again to
Thanks,
you.
Kathy.
Do you want me to repeat a question? Or you?
Nope, that's fine. Look, the leader of the Labour Party has an historic duty to hold together a coalition in the party. We've always been a coalition with different views from left and right. And it is the principal job of the leader to forge a powerful alliance in the party, in the country, and at Westminster. It's always been the case. It was the case in the 1940s. It was the case in the 1960s. It's the case still today. And Jeremy, I'm afraid, has not been able to hold us together in Westminster. We are a fractured, splintered party. And the only people who will benefit from that are the Tories. The only people who will benefit from that is the radical right in this country.
I say to Jeremy,
it is dereliction of duty of
Owen
all
Smith.
Of us
thank you very
not
much.
To heal these rifts and not to unite
Owen
and save
Smith, thank
this
you
party.
Very much. You can come back to debate that. Jeremy Corbyn, how do you propose to be an effective opposition if you don't have the majority support of the Parliamentary Labour Party?
I think the majority of Labour MPs actually want us to be an effective opposition. There are a very small number who are filling up the airwaves with various fearful announcements that they constantly make. I want us to put a party together that does take it for Tories. I reach out to all members of the Parliamentary Party. If re-elected, I will be appointing a broad shadow cabinet, as I have before, and I'll be encouraging every Labour MP to work with the shadow team on taking part. But I tell you this, when Labour MPs decide collectively, or a small number of them decide collectively not to do something and refuse to turn up to a debate on the economy, for example, because it was opened by John McDonnell, that's silly, childish behaviour. Their duty is to be out there putting it to the Tories.
With Jeremy, that some of my colleagues have never been reconciled to Jeremy's leadership. I agree with him, and I think some people have behaved appallingly in the Parliamentary Labour Party. But Jeremy, 172 Labour MPs voted no confidence in your leadership. Now, they're not red Tories. These aren't people who want to see the Tories back in power. They're not Blairites. They're just Labour MPs. They're just Labour MPs, Jeremy. And this sort of abuse, this sort of assumption that just because they're not confident in you as our leader, they're anti-Labour, they're red Tories, it cannot be allowed to continue. We can't have this sort of ugly dialogue in the Labour Party. We are fighting like ferrets in a sack. And it's the Tories who will benefit if we aren't united. So, Jeremy, you've got to do more to pull us back together.
I'm
afraid
one,
I don't think you can.
I'm the last one to do an ugly dialogue with anybody, quite honestly. And I read some memoirs of Harold Wilson at the time I was elected to this position. And he used to, every Wednesday afternoon, open his office and any Labour MP could go and talk to him. I've done the same. I've had very long conversations with a large number of colleagues. I've learned quite a lot from those conversations. I hope they've learned things as well. We've got to understand each other better. That surely is the right way of doing things. But we've got to recognise the Parliamentary Party is very important, a very important part of the Labour Party and the Labour movement, but it's not the entirety of it. We have to represent what our members want, what our affiliates want, and above all, the communities that our members and affiliates represent want as well. Therefore, I was very pleased when we managed to turn it around from abstaining on the welfare reform bill a year ago to absolutely opposing it and eventually working together, defeating them on tax credits.
And who led that campaign, Jeremy? Who led that campaign in your shadow cabinet? I did. I was the Shadow Secretary of State for DWP, who led the campaign on tax credits and on food. I was the one who took the fight to Ian Duncan Smith. I was the one who mentioned when he fell.
You were the Shadow Secretary of State.
And I was desperate to fight for a Labour victory. But at the moment, Jeremy, I say again, we're 14 points behind the Tories. We don't look like ousting them from power. And that is because we are not
convincing the country that they've got to put back their trust in us so they can look at us under your leadership and see a credible and radical government in waiting. And the reason for that is we've not put in place a programme. We've had lots of great slogans like anti-austerity. But what are we for, Jeremy? I'm for pro-prosperity. I'm for a massive Keynesian investment programme in this country, a British New Deal. I'm for actually winning in order to put on the table proper workers' rights, increased wages. We've got to get into power to do that. We're all there for winning. We're all there for investment.
Owen, you've made a lot of statements over the last few days, and I'm really pleased you have. All of them were actually already been made by the Shadow Cabinet during the past year. Many have been made by John McDonnell. And if we can come together on an economic strategy which is about investment, which is about public investment, which is about a national investment bank, then that's good, because that is really what this country needs. The Tories will take us down to a bargain basement island off the continent of Europe with low wages, high profits, grotesque levels of inequality, and a growing service economy at the expense of our manufacturing economy. You and I don't want that. We want something very different, which does require us to work together to get that investment, to get a government that is prepared to intervene in the economy and provide everyone with decent standards of living that they not just want, need and deserve, and that we don't go into a cycle of intergenerational poverty, which is what has happened with 30 years of neoliberal economics all across Europe and the USA.
A final remark, please.
Jeremy, agree on much of the analysis of what's gone wrong in our economy. We share that view that we've got a long-term structural crisis. Well, you say we put in place these policies. It's just not true, Jeremy. I sat in the Shadow Cabinet with you. I didn't once hear you talk about a £200 billion and certainly not a £500 billion investment fund that John McDonnell has now announced since I announced it. I don't think I've ever heard you say, well, it's true, I sat alongside him. I've said, let's invest 4% per year in the NHS. And I've said precisely how I'd pay for it, by introducing a wealth tax. I've said that we should be cutting pension relief for the wealthiest people in this country. I've said that we should be increasing corporation tax. I've said that we should reverse the inheritance tax. I've said explicitly how we should raise an extra £20 billion in new taxes on the wealthiest people and the corporations in this country. And I've said precisely where I would spend that. Now, Jeremy, if we'd put in place that programme, if you'd been articulating those concrete proposals instead of sloganising on occasion about anti-austerity, then I think we'd have more faith.
Okay,
I really do. And I'm pleased that you're now coming out with this. But you've had 9 months to do it.
I think one of the problems in the last general election was...
Jeremy Corbyn, if you can keep this very short.
Can I be very quick?
Yes, can you keep it very short then?
Thank you. One of the problems in the last general election was that we were in effect offering austerity light. We were offering cuts, we were offering a continuation of wage freezes.
I agree.
And that had to change. It has changed. That is why politics has changed in this country. And now you find almost an economic consensus coming together saying, well, austerity is wrong. That didn't happen until John McDonnell was appointed Shadow Chancellor.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. In the spirit of things, you should be allowed a quick remark to respond, Owen Smith.
I agree with Jeremy that he is to be thanked. You are to be thanked, Jeremy, for having helped the Labour Party rediscover a bit of its radicalism. But we need to be more than radical. We've got to be credible. We've got to look like people who've got the policies and the ideas that the country can trust. And whilst many in the Labour Party might trust you at the moment, Jeremy, the country isn't trusting you. And therein lies our problem. And that's why we need change.
I'm afraid we'll have to keep the... I'm sure you want to respond, but we do have 2 minutes at the end for that as well. I'm afraid we'll have to move on to the next topic, just to make sure that we're as fair as possible with those who've asked questions as well. So, Owen Smith, you'll be opening on this one. What would Labour's Brexit plan be? Under your leadership, and it's from Gareth Pegg in Leeds.
Well, let me be blunt. I don't want a Brexit plan under Labour. I think it was a cataclysmic mistake for our country to exit the European Union. I think it is a monumental mistake, and I think we, all of us in the Labour Party, should feel a degree of responsibility and shame for having stopped the Brexit strategy. Now, I don't blame Jeremy for this. 67% of Labour voters voted to stay in. But I think, Jeremy, we could have all worked a lot harder to win that Brexit vote. And I think you were wrong, Jeremy, to say on the day after the vote that we were going to trigger Article 50 and leave the European Union. Under me, we would be fighting to stay in the European Union. Under me, we would be saying, let's negotiate,
thank
and then let's
much,
put
Chairman
it to the
Smith.
Country again in a second referendum or a general
much.
Election.
So, Jeremy Corbyn, a question from Gareth Pegg from Leeds. What is Labour's Brexit plan?
I made the point during the referendum that the EU was far from perfect, but we had to protect the workers' rights we'd gained, we had to extend those rights, we had to sign the Posting of Workers Directive to prevent the undercutting of people, particularly in Western European economies. I made more media appearances than the rest of the Shadow Cabinet put together during the EU referendum campaign. And Owen and I spoke together at a rally in Cardiff on this subject. Straight after the result, I had a meeting with the European Socialist Parties to promise them we would work together with them on environmental issues, on market access issues, on manufacturing industry, and on environmental concerns that we share. And we got a very good reception for that. That is the strategy we're following.
Thank you, Jeremy. Owen Smith, is your position then go for a second referendum? Is that what you're proposing?
My position is we should want to stay in the European Union and we should be demanding a seat at the table alongside the Tories, arguing for the best possible negotiation. Look, the country was lied to by the Brexiteers. We were told we were going to get this extra £350 million. We were told there was easy answers to immigration. It was a lie. It was a lie, and we know that, and we do not know what the outturn of this is going to be. So I say let's negotiate hard. Let's want to stand up for what we still believe in. We're internationalists. We believe in collaboration and cooperation across our country and between countries. And I think it will be difficult for Jeremy to take that fight to the Tories because, Jeremy, for 30 years, you didn't believe in the European Union. And we all know it. And you underwent that Damascene conversion at the last minute and you talked about workers' rights. But there is a much bigger European project that we were part of. We were leaders in Europe, and now we're on the sidelines, introverted. We are not that, Jeremy. We are an outward-looking country, and we should have fought much harder. And under me, we will fight much harder.
Owen, John McCorgan, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I opened my speech to the Party of European Socialists by saying we're here because we're the Labour Party. We're here because we're not retreating to a small island mentality of running away. We want to work with you for the future. You would probably agree with that. Yes, I have had many criticisms of the European Union, its free market philosophy, the way in which the Maastricht Treaty was pushed through, and the deregulation agenda that Margaret Thatcher and others have pushed through. But I've also worked very hard with socialist parties and unions all across Europe on workers' rights, on environmental protection, on consumer protection, all those things that are very important across a continent, and we'll continue to do that. We have an opportunity here to put as much pressure as possible on the government, demand to be part of the negotiations, but above all, to try to protect the environmental issues that are so important and maintain access to European markets for industries all over Britain. Because if we lose that access to those markets, it's very unclear how quickly or where they're going to be replaced by. You know that as well as I do.
I do know that, Jeremy. And I thought it was a real mistake for us to come off the back of the Brexit vote and say, let's trigger Article 50.
No, I didn't say that.
To ally ourselves with the Tories. I just don't understand why we wanted to do that. Because the truth is, we should still be fighting for what we believe in, which is remaining part of the European Union. It's more than workers' rights. It's more than environmental protections. It is a disaster that we've left, because we are left now with very little
protection, very little mitigation against our right-wing, rotten Tory government that you know is going to use this as an excuse to strip away the rights that we believe in. And Europe was our safeguard for those rights. So we should have been absolutely in the trenches fighting for it every day. And I'd say again, I don't think we fought hard enough. And it breaks my heart that we're leaving Europe. And we shouldn't leave. We should fight again.
Owen, it was
two-thirds of Labour voters.
Jeremy Corbyn, sorry. Can we just respond to the point that you wanted to come in when Owen Smith said that you'd asked for triggering Article 50? What did you say in that case?
I said it was inevitable Article 50 was going to be triggered. This was immediately interpreted as being it should be triggered immediately. Maybe I could choose my words more carefully at the point. It is going to be triggered at some... All right, OK. Well, mea culpa. It is going to be triggered at some point. It is going to be triggered at some point and will be. Be more detailed negotiations. I don't know when it's going to be triggered, but we have to recognise a referendum was called. It did take place. And a lot of people, a majority, sadly, not of my wish, but sadly, a majority, did vote to leave. I think we have to do everything we can on the areas where you and I agree to try and ensure we continue having market access to Europe for British industry. We maintain similarity of social legislation, environmental regulations, consumer regulations, and all those things. And I've also arranged for a meeting, which I hope you will attend, with the Norwegian Labour Party in September to discuss how they do things and what their relationship is with the European Union.
Jeremy, I'd be delighted to come. But I do think this is a fundamental issue of leadership. It is the most disastrous decision, worse even than losing elections, for us to be departing the European Union and becoming an isolated island on the fringe of Europe. It's worse. And the leader of the Labour Party had to be in the vanguard of fighting for that. So I say to you, if you win this contest and you remain the leader of our party, will you agree with me that it should be our policy to push hard in these Brexit negotiations and then put it to the country again in a second referendum or at the general election?
Well, it will more likely be. It will more likely be at a general election. We campaigned as a party, we got more than two-thirds of our supporters to vote to remain, but it wasn't evenly spread across the country, as you well know. My constituency voted 73% to remain. Constituencies in the valleys and other places voted quite strongly to leave. We have to win those people back.
They did, and the reason they did that was because there has been underinvestment in those communities. We agree about that. The reason they did that is we need a reindustrialisation programme.
I agree.
We need to deal with wages, we need to deal with workers' rights, we need a British New Deal to invest in those communities. But that will be so much easier if we're inside Europe. It's so much harder if we're on the fringes of Europe. Let's just be clear. The Bank of England met today and reduced interest rates to their lowest level for 300 years. They announced another £60 billion of investment in our bankers in order to refloat the economy. They said that inflation is going to go up, house prices are going to go up, they said that wages are going to fall, and because of our leaving the European Union. It is an unmitigated disaster, Jeremy. So I say again, shouldn't we be saying let's stay in? Well, I think we've got to do more than that. I think we've got to fight to stay in. We've got to say, let's stay in the European Union.
There was a question from another, a supplementary to this one, from Gerald Elvin from Ilford. Could the Labour Party have done more during the campaign? Could the Labour Party have provided better leadership in this?
We spent a lot of money on it. We did a lot of campaigning. I travelled the whole country doing a very large number of rallies and meetings. I think one of the problems was that until the last few days of the campaign, the media were only interested in the disputes within the Tory party, and it was very hard for us to get any cut through on what was really going on. Yes, obviously there's lessons to be learned from every campaign that you undertake, and I didn't blame the media. I said it was one factor, not the only factor.
We worked hard as a party. We did get the vast majority of our supporters to vote for Remain. The Tory party did the opposite, and only less than a third of their supporters actually voted to remain. The result is what the result is. We now have to work with it to try and protect the jobs, the industries and the environment and all the social issues that are so important that we have benefited through membership of the European Union. Owen and I actually spoke together in Cardiff City Hall at a Remain rally not that long ago.
Owen Smith, is that fair enough?
We did, Jeremy. We did. And you spoke very well. But you spoke, I think, in quite limited terms about our European Union. You spoke about workers' rights, and we agree on that. Yeah. You spoke about environmental protections, and we agree on that. But I don't think you spoke with the passion that so many of us feel in the Labour Party about the reasons for us being in. Internationalism, peace, prosperity across the whole of Europe. I'm not happy with socialism in one country. I want it for all of the peoples of Europe. And we can be a civilising force for good in the European Union. Oh, now we're out of it. And that, for me, is an absolute tragedy.
OK, I'm going to finish this question. Just to clarify, so should the terms of a Brexit deal be put to the people? Owen Smith, should it be put to the people in a general election or referendum?
I'm absolutely clear about
that. Lovely, thank you.
We should definitely put it back to the people once we know what the deal looks like.
OK, Jeremy Corbyn, where do you stand on this? If we could have a brief answer to summarise.
As of now, we've no idea what the terms are. I think it'll come to us in a general election. It may even be 2020 or before that. My position is I want to work as closely as possible with Europe, with protecting all those issues. But above all, the economic integration between Britain and Europe is absolutely essential. Otherwise, a very large number of jobs, particularly in manufacturing industry, will be lost.
Will you be pushing for it? Yes or no? Will you be pushing for it, Jeremy Corbyn? Leave it there. Right, we'll move on to the next then. And this one will be opened by Jeremy Corbyn. It's a question from John Berry from Cornwall. What is your industrial policy which will make the UK competitive in the global economy of the 21st century?
Primarily, it's about investment in manufacturing and frontier technology industries in this country. It's about a national investment bank that will improve the infrastructure. John's question comes from Cornwall, which has the lowest wages in the whole country, some of the worst infrastructure, and some of the greatest needs for increased investment. You could say the same of the northeast and the northwest of England. You could say the same of parts of Wales. A national investment bank with a regional investment bank attached to it would help to develop that industrial strategy, but it's also about training, it's also about good quality apprenticeships, it's also about not penalising young people for wanting to go to university and become qualified. It's investment in people, education, industries, and ultimately good quality jobs.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Owen Smith.
Well, Catherine, my strategy would be to right some of the wrongs that previous governments, Labour and Tory, have visited on our economy. We haven't invested enough. We have allowed regional inequalities to grow up, and we crucially allow Britain to become deindustrialised. We imagine that all of those jobs in manufacturing that used to be the mainstay of our economy couldn't be kept alive in Britain. We were wrong about that. We were wrong. Germany and the Netherlands and other countries have a much more powerful manufacturing sector. So we need a proper industrial strategy backed up with a big infrastructure programme to kickstart it, a British New Deal, £200 billion worth of investment through borrowing. And crucially, we need to start making things again in Britain, reindustrializing parts of the world that I come from and represent. That's the secret to getting Britain working again.
Thank you very much. You've both mentioned renationalisation. It's a common theme in your policies. How is this going to make us more competitive in the global market? Jeremy Corbyn.
Make us more competitive because we would be playing to our strengths, which are skills and innovation. Far too many new products that are developed at research places or universities in Britain end up not being developed here, and they go abroad because nobody's prepared to put the capital into it. Or companies come in, buy up a small company that's done some really interesting new developments, and say to them, let's get it made somewhere else and take it somewhere else. We need a different strategy on doing this. We also need to promote solutions in Britain that do encourage manufacturing. I'll give you an example. I was at a place in Widnes that makes the towers for wind turbines. Their industry has totally plummeted in the past couple of years because the government cut down the feed-in tariffs to an unsustainable level. Therefore, nobody wants to get them made here or buy them here. By maintaining those feed-in tariffs for another 5 years, that would have sustained and developed that industry and the solar panel industry. There's a whole lot of areas where government intervention can make a very big difference. But it's also about training. It's also about really good quality apprenticeships. Some are brilliant and very, very good. Some are just a code for low pay and gross exploitation of people who think they're on an apprenticeship.
The Tories have presided over the slowest recovery from a recession in 100 years. We've got the biggest downturn in wages, the largest increase in job insecurity, the biggest growth in inequalities in this country, regional inequalities and inequalities between individuals. And what are we announcing today with a Tory government in Westminster? Another £60 billion for the banks through QE. Due to a recession caused, as Jeremy and I and all of you know, not by Labour spending on schools and hospitals, but by Tory greed and bankers' greed. That's the reality. Now, I'm still angry, as I know Jeremy is, that none of those bankers have gone to jail. But the best thing we can do is put in place a framework for refloating not the bankers, but the people, investing in Britain once more, not compounding the problem with more austerity. But we've got to be concrete about it. It's not just enough to say we're going to be anti-austerity. We've got to say, how are we going to raise the money to invest in day-to-day services and in our industry? By, first of all, borrowing £200 billion, a British New Deal, long-dated gilts. We haven't heard that before from Labour in the last 9 months. We've heard it during this campaign, I'm glad to say. And by raising taxes, asking the corporations that have done so well during this downturn to stop the culture of greed and to start paying in a bit more, not cutting corporation tax, not getting back to the bonus culture that sees Philip Green and others buying their new yacht while nurses and care workers see their pay frozen. That's what we need to do. Good old-fashioned socialist policies, but ones that people can believe in.
One of the mistakes we made when in government before was when the banking crisis came in 2008, we bailed them out with £300 billion of quantitative easing. We took the majority of them into some form of public ownership. We didn't direct the investment strategies they were to follow. They were still allowed to mess around with tax havens and offshore accounting. They weren't investing in manufacturing industry. Some of them were even putting buy-to-let mortgages on their marketplace. And then, as some of them have come turned around a bit, like Lloyds, £2.5 billion profit. Result, they dismiss a very large number of their staff and close 200 more branches. We have a public stake in these banks. We should exercise and use that public stake, make them work in a socially responsible way.
Okay. Broad agreement there. So if you want to sum up, I'm going to move on then. I agree.
And Jeremy, we've got a steel industry in Wales that you know is struggling. But I say about all of these things, we agree about so much of this stuff. We are both men who want to see...
So why did you resign?
Because I don't think you're going to be able to deliver it. I don't think we can win, Jeremy, at the moment. And without being able to win, without being able to put our principles into practice, I don't see that we're going to be able to do anything other than protest about it. We've got to win. We've got to win in order to get this stuff done. Otherwise, it's just hot air, Jeremy.
We shall leave that subject there. Thank you very much. Right, the next question comes from Georgina Allen, and I believe we're starting with Owen Smith this time. The British public appears to have been convinced that the Labour Party is a financially irresponsible party. How would you challenge this wide-held view, Owen Smith?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would spell out precisely where all of the money that I want to spend on improving public services, where it's going to come from. That's why we failed to win back trust in the last 9 months, because we've not been clear. We've said we're anti-austerity, but we've not said specifically enough what we're pro. And more importantly, we've not said how we'd fund it. So I've been clear. £200 billion in order to invest in public services, in schools and skills and healthcare and our hospitals, and new taxes on the wealthiest. Get rid of the big cut in corporation tax. Put it back up to 20% at least. Make sure that we're not offering the wealthiest more tax breaks. Okay. Reform our pension system, which is rigged against ordinary workers. Be credible.
Owen Smith, welcome back to Jeremy Corbyn, what's your opening response to this? How do you convince the people that the Labour Party is a financially responsible party?
By spending money sensibly and wisely and not wasting it as this government does. If you charge people very high, totally unreasonable rents in the private rented sector, and then use the benefit system to subsidise those private landlords, that's a waste of money. If you underpay people in so many industries that they have to access working tax credits in order to keep their head above water, that is not a very sensible use of money. So you do a number of things. One is you invest in the needs of people. Therefore, a very large housing programme that will build 1 million new homes over 5 years. Council housing, lifetime tenancies, proper investment. That is good sense, good business, and creates good jobs, not just for building workers, but all down the supply chain.
Thank you very much.
Financial sense.
Fiscal responsibility was at the heart of Ed Miliband's manifesto.
Sorry?
Fiscal responsibility, it's a term that Labour has used for quite a while. You've had 10 months at the helm now. Why aren't people still convinced in the eyes of Georgina Allen that Labour is a financially responsible party?
I think we need to get the message out there about what is financially irresponsible in this government, in its waste of money on the way it does a lot of things, of its lack of investment in public need, and the disgraceful ways it's treated local government all across England, and the way it's treated the Welsh and Scottish governments in the funding that they get. Because that is actually irresponsible, because what you end up doing is making the poorest and most vulnerable pay the highest price. We have to get the message out there. This government is about hitting the poorest in our society. That is financially irresponsible.
Getting the message out. How are you going to do that? Because it seems, you know, successive Labour leaders have tried. Why isn't the message out there so far?
We'll do our best to get that message out there through our campaigning. We'll do our best to get it through in the media. We'll do our best to put it out there that inequality is a waste. Tax write-offs and tax havens are irresponsible and fundamentally wrong. I would have thought the Panama Papers are so obvious about everything that's wrong in modern Britain and the way in which the wealthy think they can evade tax.
Owen Smith, as I mentioned, successive Labour leaders have tried to reverse this. How could you be any different? Successive Labour leaders have tried, not succeeding, it appears. How will you change this?
By showing the country the balance sheet. Quite simply, by saying we can get £6 billion from reversing the corporation tax. We can get an extra billion by getting rid of the inheritance tax, allowing millionaires to pass on their homes to their children free of charge. We can get £3 billion a year by introducing a surcharge on the wealth through dividends and shares held by only the wealthiest 1%, those people who are already earning £150,000 a year. Practical policies, and then saying to the public, what would we spend this money on? We'd spend it on the NHS, 4% a year, to get us back up to the levels we need to be. These are the practical policies that we need to pursue. And if we were explicit, if we were concrete, if we were credible, then we would be listened to. But at present, 2 million Labour voters are telling us they'd rather have a Tory Prime Minister than a Labour government. And that's got to be a wake-up call to everybody in this party.
In a time of great national debt, how is campaigning on a policy of being anti-austerity, going to reinforce an idea that Labour is financially responsible?
They've doubled the debt under the Tories. They borrowed £40 billion extra this year than they were projected to do 6 months ago. It's failed fundamentally. The NHS is going bust right across this country. Our councils are having to strip millions of pounds out of their budgets. Austerity has fundamentally failed Britain. It's time to invest. It's time for a Labour government to say, let's start investing in this country. It's not a question of whether we can afford to do this. It's a question of whether we can afford not to do it. They keep saying to me, the Tories, across the chamber, you're going to leave debts to our children. Well, my answer back to them is, I'm not prepared to leave crumbling schools and broken hospitals and an infrastructure in this country and an industry in this country that isn't fit to serve my children. That's what I'm not prepared to do. So I will invest as leader of this party. I will make sure we're a Labour government that invests.
It is, of course, it's about investment. It is about investment in manufacturing industry. It is investment in social infrastructure. It is investment in education. It's not setting false targets to pay off the debt or move into surplus. George Osborne found that out the hard way, and his five-year plan has one consistent theme to it. It's always 5 years away. And the new Chancellor is not much different on that. And this morning had to put £60 billion, the Bank of England put £60 billion more into the economy in order to try and stave off recession. You can't cut your way to prosperity. You invest your way to prosperity. We have the lowest level of investment of any OECD country, and it's going downwards. If we don't invest, we don't get the good quality of manufacturing, we don't get the jobs, we don't get the infrastructure, we decline as a society. You can't do everything but by the service economy alone. That is what the Tory message is. But I have to say this, I think we have made mistakes ourselves. In the last general election, we were not an anti-austerity party. We were actually proposing to continue with the public sector wage freeze and continue with some level of cuts in public services. We have changed, we have developed our policies in a much better way. I want us to go a lot further down the road of investment to create jobs and prosperity for all, not cut and allow these grotesque levels of inequality in our society to continue.
Well, I fundamentally agree with Jeremy about that. But Jeremy, in order to do it, we've got to win in Cardiff North. We've got to win in Nuneaton. We've got to win in Milton Keynes. We've got to win in Kingswood. We've got to win 100 seats from the Tories. We've got to get Tories and Greens and Liberals to vote Labour. And at the moment, they're not going to do that. At the moment, all of the evidence shows us that we are likely to be at 22%. Well, somebody shouts from the audience they voted for us for the mayor. They did. But I tell you what, I'm not satisfied with that. I'm not complacent. I think winning in Bristol, winning in London, winning in other parts of the country, it's great, but we were 18 seats down in the local election. UKIP in power in Wales. UKIP in the Assembly. Behind the Tories in Scotland. This isn't progress. We're going backwards, my friend. Backwards.
OK, thank you very much. We'll leave that topic today. Thank you. Right. We have been having a bit of audience participation. They'll be glad to hear this is the next topic. Michael Brunwin from Bramtree asks, what are your views on the renewal of Trident? Jeremy Corbyn, I'll start with you.
I voted against the renewal of Trident.
In fairness to Jeremy Corbyn and also to Owen Smith, if it happens, we are timing this. So if you can keep your applause for Jeremy Corbyn to go through his 40 seconds.
Do I get
can
we start? For that?
Can we start again to make
yes,
sure that
I voted
every
against
candidate...
the renewal of Trident because I want to live in a nuclear-free world. And I think Parliament was invited to vote for a blank check to the government for renewal of Trident with no financial costing whatsoever behind it. The points I made, and I made them in the leadership campaign last year, were quite simply this. It was a Labour government that developed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty in the 1960s. Article 6 of that treaty requires the declared nuclear weapon states, of which Britain is one, to take steps towards nuclear disarmament. Renewal of Trident is not taking steps towards nuclear disarmament. It's going in the opposite direction. And I want to be in a Labour government that fulfils our obligations and does everything it can to encourage other areas of the world to become nuclear-free zones, which has actually worked and been very effective, and carry out our obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Thank you very much. Thanks. And I appreciate you keeping your applause to the end there, just in fairness to the candidates. Owen Smith, where do you stand on the renewal of Trident?
Look, my great political hero is Aneurin Bevan. And I am a Bevanite on the issue of nuclear weapons. I'm in favour of a world without nuclear weapons. I'm in favour of the Labour Party being in the vanguard of looking for multilateral disarmament. All weapons across the world should be got rid of. Now, if I sincerely believed that I would assist multilateral disarmament, everybody getting rid of their nuclear weapons by divesting ourselves of ours first, then I would do it tomorrow. I used to believe that, but I don't believe it any longer. I believe the world has become a more dangerous, volatile place. I believe Russia is a more dangerous power than it used to be. And my view about this is very clear, that we must retain a nuclear deterrent in order to enable the multilateral disarmament of the entire world's arsenal. That is the unfortunate, terrible truth. Jeremy and I just disagree about that, I'm afraid to say.
This is a very emotive topic, I appreciate, but it would be good to have a good discussion on it because we do have two candidates on opposite ends of the debate here. Jeremy Corbyn, do you want to respond to that? Does it make us vulnerable if we don't have nuclear deterrent?
197 countries in the world do not have nuclear weapons. There are 5 declared nuclear weapon states. In addition to that, there is nuclear weapons held by India, by Pakistan, by Israel, and by North Korea. The 6-party talks hopefully will help to bring about some kind of security on the Korean Peninsula, and also pressure from China would help to do that. Promotion of a Middle East weapons of mass destruction free zone will help to bring Israel and Iran eventually, a very long way off I'm sure, but bring them to the principle of that. So I simply say this, that if we spend all this money on replacing the Trident nuclear missile system, what's the message we're giving to the rest of the world on this? Would it not be better if we redoubled our efforts through the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, encouraged other nations to go in the same direction, but also ask ourselves the question, under what circumstances would you use it? Secondly, are we aware that it is the ultimate weapon of mass destruction that indiscriminately kills very large numbers of civilians? And the security issues that face this planet at the present time, are any of those security issues actually going to be solved by the use of nuclear weapons? Or are they going to be solved by political action, by political dialogue, by promotion of human rights, justice and democracy in every single part of the world, and of a foreign policy that puts that as the headline figure rather than the last player of the page?
We're all aware of the appalling consequences of any country in the world using nuclear weapons. That is why we should all want to get rid of all nuclear weapons. The only point where Jeremy and I disagree is how we best achieve that. And we do disagree about this. Now, Jeremy's view is one I held 25 years ago, which is we get rid of ours first as a gesture, and we encourage the rest of the world to do likewise. But I say to you, Jeremy, I think that is unfortunately naive. I don't believe that we will encourage the rest of the world to do it. I do believe that we have appallingly allowed successive governments, multilateral disarmament, to fall away from there, where it ought to be, at the forefront of international diplomacy and debate. We both want to put that back on the table. But I think we are better able to do that if we come to that table with a bargaining chip. If we throw that bargaining chip away, then we lose out the ability to ask other countries
what do you say
to get rid of their own weapons.
Okay. That's just, I mean, right.
we can
what do you say to those countries that don't have nuclear weapons and don't want them, to countries like South Africa, Argentina and Brazil that have willingly given up their nuclear weapons in order to live in a safer world? They have the moral authority to do these things. And surely you and I can both agree that security issues that face the world are not going to be solved by the detonation of a nuclear bomb,
of course,
which would kill millions,
of course,
which would drive the whole world into recession and create an environmental disaster, not just in the area where that bomb went off. Listen, I've met people who were victims of nuclear testing on the Pacific Islands. I've met British victims of nuclear testing. Those people all say a nuclear weapon is totally indiscriminate. These were innocent fishermen living on islands in the Pacific who are now suffering terminal cancers as a result of those tests all those years ago.
Nobody is going to contest how awful these things are. None of us are going to argue with that. It's evident to everybody across the planet how dreadful these things are. But South Africa is a great example. They got rid of their weapons unilaterally, and the rest of the world did not disarm. And we are not South Africa. We are one of the permanent five members of the Security Council. We are one of the great powers in the world in security terms. And for us to powerfully go into the debate with other countries and push for multilateral non-proliferation and disarmament, I think we need to be able to say to those countries, look, we are progressively disarming ourselves, but we need to have a powerful argument to make that we've got ours and we will get rid of them in exchange for theirs. It's a basic fact of bartering and negotiating. You used to be a trade union negotiator. You should understand that you've got to have power going into a negotiation. Bevan absolutely understood it. I understand it, and I think that's what we should be doing in order to get rid of the entire world's arsenal of nuclear weapons.
When I've attended nuclear non-proliferation treaty conferences and humanitarian effects of war conferences, I tell you, the countries that come there are from all over the world. They're very interested in living in a nuclear-free world. Yeah, they listen to some extent to what we're saying, to some extent what Russia and the USA and China and France are saying, but they listen far more intently to South Africa, to Abdul Minty, their nuclear disarmament negotiator, about how you can practically bring about fissile material cutoff, how you can bring about an end to the testing at any level of nuclear weapons, and how you can really seriously bring about a nuclear-free world. And they say to me, well, why, if your country is so keen on bringing about a nuclear-free world, are you proposing to spend a very large sum of money, let's say $100 billion, on the replacement of Trident? They just look at us and say, why are you doing it when you've got so much to give to the world of your human rights tradition and your democratic traditions?
I wish I could agree with you about this. I really do. Because if you were right, then I think we could make the world a safer place more quickly than we would be able to under my plan. But I don't agree with you. I don't think that America and Russia listen more closely to South Africa in respect of nuclear weapons than they do to us. I just don't think that's right. And that speaks to my point about this perhaps being an idealistic position and one that we might all aspire to, but I just don't think it's the credible position. I don't think it's showing leadership for us within the world, and I'm afraid we're just going to have to disagree about this.
Okay, and on that note, we will leave that subject. Thank you. On to the issue of immigration, and this comes from Charlie Mason in Pembrokeshire. I'm sure both of you condemn racism and xenophobia as much as you promote the economic and social benefits of immigration. But do you recognise that people, communities and areas in the UK feel uneasy about immigration? And if so, what will you do to reduce this unease? And I'll start that with Owen Smith, please.
Well, I'll tell you the first thing I won't do. I won't do what Theresa May did and trail racist advans around the country in order to whip up hatred and intolerance and division. And I won't do what Nigel Farage did, which was stand in front of those racist posters. And it's been heartbreaking, I think, in recent months, especially during the Brexit campaign, to see racism and intolerance and all sorts of other divisions emerge in Britain. But what we've also got to do is acknowledge that there are pressures that immigration brings, and we've got to deal with them. And we deal with them through investment. There are pressures on doctors and on hospitals and on school waiting lists. All of those things are affected. If we invest through a British New Deal, we would mitigate pressures, and people would be easier in this country about immigration.
Jeremy Corbyn, do you recognise the unease, and what will you do?
I do recognise the unease, and I do recognise the need for funding in areas where there are problems over school places, about health facilities and housing, through the implementation of a migrant impact fund, which this government has abolished, actually. It was set up by the last Labour government and refused to access EU funds that were available to assist with those issues. And I think it's very important we do that. Secondly, recognise that we do live in a multicultural society, and we have benefited, all of us have benefited, from the brilliance of people that have made their homes here, made their contribution to our society, helped to run our health service, education service, university, science, and so many other things. Fund the communities properly, fund the services properly, but absolutely turn totally against any kind of racist troll of any sort within our society.
Thank you very much. So you're agreed in acknowledging the unease, agreed in the need to tackle it with some sort of fund. What about controlling migration numbers? Owen Smith, you can start with this again.
Well, look, I think we have got to have an honest look at this issue and an honest conversation with the British people, because many people in that referendum vote were concerned about immigration. We know that from the polling. But I think for us in Labour, the first thing we've got to do is say, our values are values of tolerance and solidarity, and we are an immigrant nation. My family come from England and Spain. My wife's family come from India and Scotland. This part of the world where we're standing here today is made up of immigrants. So we've got to, I think, be proud about the mixed heritage of our country. And truthfully, if we weren't going through the worst recession we've seen in generations, if we weren't seeing a Tory government cutting back through austerity and all of the service that all of our communities rely upon, if we were investing properly, then we wouldn't have the volume of problems that we've got about immigration.
Okay,
the intolerance wouldn't exist. And that means, crucially, we've got to be in power. I say it again, all of this comes back to Labour being in power. And we are not in power. We're not in power.
Would you control? Do we need, the question I asked was, do we need to control migration numbers?
We've seen the Tories play a losing game of setting targets. They played a losing game. Well, I'm not going to turn around and say, let's have a finite target for immigration, because we know it doesn't work. You miss those targets. Many parts of our country require immigration. The nurses in the hospitals, over the road from us is the Heath Hospital in Cardiff. It's full of foreign nurses.
So we need to agree, but do we need to control a level of it?
Well, I think we need to be honest, which is we do need immigration in this country, and in some areas of the country, it causes problems. So our job is to form a government in order to mitigate those problems. It is not our job to inflame pressures
Control or no control?
I've just said to you, I don't think we should be setting a finite number. But the truth is, we're about to leave the European Union, and that's not going to solve the problems. We should be in Europe fighting for everybody across Europe having a greater degree of control.
The audience can border and conclusions. Jeremy Corbyn. Should we be controlling the
non-European migration is very strictly controlled, often actually very unfairly, particularly where it's a case of family reunion, where arbitrary levels of income are demanded of a family before they can bring children or partner into Britain. I think that needs to be looked at and changed. In the case of European migration, if we're part of a single market with free movement of capital, then what goes with that is free movement of labour. What I've done all through the referendum campaign and before that and since is to demand the signing of the Posting of Workers Directive to prevent the importation of a whole workforce to undercut a workforce that's already here in this country and destroy the wages and conditions in that particular industry. And I've raised this with colleagues all across Europe. The British government finally did concede that it would sign the Posting of Workers Directive. I think bringing about a greater level of economic equality across Europe would actually have a very big impact on that. But Owen's right. We've got to recognise that without migrant workers, we wouldn't have the health service we've got, we wouldn't have the education service we've got, or many other things. And when Farage, in the referendum campaign, produced that utterly disgusting poster, which showed a group of people, desperate people, in that desperate group of people, there were doctors, there were engineers, there were nurses, there were scientists, there were farmers, people fleeing from a war, and he says they are the threat. Surely we can have a hand of humanity rather than a hand of abuse reached out to the world.
Because, in fairness, I did go after Owen Smith. So to summarise for that, for Charlie Mason, is that a yes, is a no, is a halfway house? Where are we standing on?
There is control of non-European migration. There is obviously control of that. For European migration within a single market, I think there has to be a harmonising condition. There has to be a preventing of the undercutting of wages. That will indeed reduce the flows. But also remember, there are 2 million British people that live in other parts of Europe. They work there, they contribute there, they want to stay there just as much as the European nationals that made their homes here want to stay here, and I think they should.
Owen Smith.
I just want to say that, have you seen what Theresa May has done since she won in respect of refugees into this country? On the very first day she took office, she scrapped the post of Minister for Syrian Refugees. On her second day in office, she reintroduced child detention for child refugees in this country. That is what the Tories will do. And it should be a salutary reminder to us that unless we are able to form a Labour government, we have to sit by and watch this happening. We have to sit by and watch them fan the flames of hatred and division. And that cannot be allowed to continue. We've got to get to the prospect of a Labour government as soon as possible.
Jeremy Corbyn, do you want to summarise your response to this, and we'll move on then to the next?
The issues of refugees is a huge one. There's more displaced people than at any time in recorded history all over this planet. And the idea that you can solve it by building barbed wire between Greece and Macedonia and think the problem's going to go away, and then be concerned when you see people dying in the sea, children dying in the sea, any more than the horrors of those camps in Calais and Dunkirk, which I visited. So let's have a humanitarian and human response, which is about giving immediate help and support. Thank Italy and Greece for what they've done and tried to do, but also really redouble our efforts to try and bring about a political settlement in Syria so that those refugees can actually return home.
Okay, thank you very much to you both there. Okay, this question comes from Thomas Burke in Birmingham. And Jeremy Corbyn, I'll ask you to begin on this one. What will you do to combat anti-Semitism, specifically in the Labour Party, and all those whose behaviour or rhetoric legitimises anti-Semitism?
Anti-Semitism is totally wrong and totally unacceptable in any form, in any place in our society, and it absolutely has no place whatsoever in the Labour Party. When I became leader, there were allegations made, and a number of people have been suspended from party membership so that investigations can take place into what they are alleged to have done or alleged to have said. I appointed Shami Chakrabarti to undertake a serious inquiry into this, and she did that with great diligence. She did it in 2 months. She produced the report, and it was put to the National Executive, and there are a number of rule changes that are put in there. She also said that in addition to sanctions against anyone that commits any kind of racist act, there should be an education and an inclusion process within our party. Anti-Semitism is simply totally wrong and not acceptable.
Thank you very much. Owen Smith.
Anti-Semitism is one of the most pernicious forms of prejudice for all sorts of reasons that we fully understand. And it has been absolutely appalling to see our party, the Labour Party, with anti-Semitism in our ranks. It's been absolutely disgraceful. And I'm very clear about this. If I were the leader of the Labour Party, I would have zero tolerance for it. Zero. Anybody found of anti-Semitic boost in our party would be out. Would be out of our party, and they would not be coming back. No short-term measures, no short-term suspensions. They would be out, and they would never come back into the Labour Party.
Every case must be investigated. Every case must be investigated, as indeed should any form of racism whatsoever within our party or within our society. That is exactly what we're doing. That's exactly what the party position is. That's exactly what I hope the rule book will reflect to ensure there is a due process of incontrovertible investigation of every case. And I agree with Owen, where a case is proved against somebody, then of course they don't have a place within the party.
Okay, thank you. Owen Smith, if you could summarise your response.
Well, look, I'm very clear about this. Of course all cases have to be investigated, but we've been too slow. We've been too slow to look into this. We've been too slow to acknowledge that we've got a problem in the movement. And it is in the Labour Party that we've got a problem with anti-Semitism. Now, this should make us all ashamed. Everybody in this room should be ashamed that in the Labour Party we're talking about dealing with anti-Semitism. Now, I ask you this, Jeremy, how has this happened? How has this happened under the last 9 months? Because it is growing. It is growing in our movement. I suspect it is because many people in our movement are very worried about their communities, but I just don't think we've done enough to stamp it out. I don't think we've been strong enough. I don't think our leadership, collectively, I don't think our leadership has been strong enough in stamping it out.
Owen Smith, Jeremy Corbyn, I will let you respond, but there is a question in raised. Owen Smith, how do you respond
I've made my position on this absolutely clear. That is why I wanted an inquiry done into it. Many of the cases that we investigated actually predate my leadership by quite a long way. And so I wanted action to be taken on it. I want our party to be the inclusive, open, welcoming place for everybody, whatever their faith, whatever their ethnic group, whatever their community they come from. That is surely what the strength of our party is about. 19 people have been suspended from membership and investigations are ongoing. Rule changes are coming forward to ensure, which you and I, I'm sure, would agree with, there is a proper independently monitored form of investigation of what goes on within the party. You and I absolutely agree. Racism has no place whatsoever in our society or our party.
But, How do you respond? There was a point raised in the audience, and it's something else that's been raised in the media as well. How do you respond to this criticism that it's a witch hunt, that it's political point scoring, as opposed to...
Catherine, I've been in this Labour Party for 30 years. I've only remembered in the last 9 months a discussion about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. That's the truth! That's the truth! It's in the last 9 months that we've been dealing with it.
Excuse me, can we hear
Now, I'm not sure why that's come about, and I don't blame you for it, Jeremy, but I do think we've got to do more to deal with it.
Excuse me, can we have a bit of quiet?
This room is an indicator of it in some regards. We have... You know, Jeremy says he wants a comradely debate. We are not behaving like comrades to each other in this party right now. We're not. Too many people are telling us in our CLPs that the debate is ugly, that they feel intimidated, that there is an abusive dialogue between different wings of our party. We've got to heal the Labour Party.
We've got to unite the Labour Party, otherwise we will never win. We will be split and we will lose. And the Tories and those people who are racist in this country will benefit.
Right, thank you very much for that. We'll leave that there, if that's okay with both of you. Right, on to the, and it may well be the final question for this evening, depends how you go now. This comes from Helen Evans in Oxford. What are your plans for ensuring the UK's third female Prime Minister is Labour and not Conservative? Owen Smith, I'll start with you on this one.
Well, look, I'm incredibly proud of the fact that the Labour Party has got a far better record on promoting women within our ranks than any other party. 40% of our MPs are women right now. It's 20% in the Tory party. They may have a first lady, but they always put women last. That's the truth of the Labour Party. Now, here in Wales, we've been ahead of the curve. Here in Wales, we've committed to having 50% of our councillors as women. I want to go further than that. I think 50% of our MPs should be women, and we should use AWS to get there. We should have 50% of our shadow cabinet as women, at least 50%, okay. And we should have at least 50% of the top jobs in the cabinet.
Thank you.
The
very
big
much.
Offices of state, they should be women too. And there are more than
Thank
enough women
much,
in the Labour Party to fill those roles.
Thank
Let's
you
look
very
like
much.
The country.
Owen Smith, you'll have plenty of time to come back on that. Jeremy Corbyn, what are your plans for ensuring the UK's third female Prime Minister is from Labour and not Conservative?
Promoting women within the party, promoting the organisation of women within the party, promoting all women shortlists to ensure that we get that parity of representation in Parliament as well as at council level, and also driving down the gender pay gap and discrimination against women in our society as a way of promoting women. I'd also say that when I was elected leader, the first thing I did was to appoint a shadow cabinet, and for the first time ever, the majority of members of that shadow cabinet were women, and will remain so.
Thank you very much. There have been concerns raised about misogyny within the Labour Party. Is it something that concerns you, Jeremy Corbyn, and what are you going to do to tackle that?
It does concern me if there's misogyny of any level in our society and obviously within our party, and that is part of a number of the issues that were addressed in the Chakrabarti report about the conduct of the Labour Party, its organisation and its meetings, and the way in which we organise ourselves, which sometimes makes it very difficult for women to be as involved as they would want to be and should be within the party. Our campaigning methods, our presentational methods, and a very large number of other things. We need to strengthen the role of women within the party at every level, and that I'm determined to do.
Owen Smith.
Well, I agree with Jeremy about all of that. We in Labour have been standard bearers for feminism and for women for a long, long time, and we stand out in our society. There's just five of amongst the FTSE 100 top companies, there's just five that has a woman as chief executive. As Jeremy says, there's a 20% pay gap between the money earned by women and the money earned by men. Now, I look at my children. I've got two boys and a girl. And I think, why on earth, how on earth, is it morally justifiable? Is it economically sustainable for my daughter to have the prospect of being just as bright, just as able, and earning a fifth less than either of my sons? We've got to change that. We've got to change all of this in our society. And the Labour Party can show that we're better than the rest. We have shown that we're better than the rest. I've been proud that in Wales, where we've had difficulties with all women shortlists, I know I was at the heart of some of those, but we've turned it around.
As
Shadow Welsh Secretary, we turned it around. And the Assembly, the Labour group in the Assembly, is a beacon of hope for women.
I did ask Jeremy Corbyn about concerns about misogyny. I did ask Jeremy Corbyn about concerns about misogyny. There have been some concerns about your use of language in recent weeks. How can you convince us that you're in favour of, you know, promoting women and so on when that sort of language is used?
Well, by what I've just said, if I am the leader of this party, then I am absolutely pledging to this party that I would promote women, that I would use all women shortlists until we had 50% of the parliamentary Labour Party. I would guarantee that at least half of my shadow cabinet and the top jobs in my shadow cabinet, at least half,
would-be women. I would fight day and daily for women, as I have done. 80% of the cuts under austerity, in particular the tax credit cuts that we overturned, fall on women. Most of the cuts to disabled people have fallen on women. Women have had a terrible deal from this Tory government, and I fought it at every turn, and I would continue to do that day and daily if I were the leader of this party.
OK, Jeremy Corbyn, you want to come back on that?
Owen's figure is correct, that 80% of cuts fall disproportionately on women. And indeed, after the first Tory budget, we did an analysis of the effects of that budget on women, and it is devastating. It's terrible what is happening, because they all disproportionately fall on women. That's practical work in opposition to show that. We also have to drive down the gender pay gap, but also end the idea that certain jobs and certain professions are reserved for one gender, not for the other. And so I organised with Chinyawoma a very interesting event in Parliament in the summer, which was of women engineers being invited to Parliament. And I talked to some of the older women who had studied engineering 20 or 30 years ago and said how lonely it was at college or university when they admitted, "I want to be an engineer." I said, "What do you want to be an engineer for? You're a woman." They said, "Well, I want to be an engineer. My mother taught me all of this," because she was very keen on science and people learning engineering and all those skills. So you have to start at the beginning in schools, making sure nothing is debarred to the girls as well as the boys. Deal with the issue of gender pay and inequality, and deal with the issues of glass ceilings and discrimination that go with it. It's not just about women in the boardroom, women in Parliament, or women councillors. It's also about day-to-day life, the way in which women lose out on career opportunities because they've taken a year or two off to have children in their 30s and suddenly find that all the career opportunities they thought were there suddenly disappear. We need very tough legislation to prevent that happening. And also, in companies, we need to end the sort of social network of early evening discussion groups when aspirant candidates with different positions in companies come together. Who's not there? Younger women who want to be looking after their children. The men should also be at home looking after their children.
Owen Smith, summarise your response now, please.
Again, Jeremy and I are one on this. We've got to end maternity discrimination. We've got to end the gender pay gap. It's 46 years to the month that I was born, and Barbara Castle put through the original Equal Pay Act, a great beacon for women in this country. But we need another Equal Pay Act. We need to use legislation in Parliament in order to narrow that gap. We need to change the laws of this country in order to outlaw discrimination against women. And to do that, we've got to be in government. We've got to be in government. And I'm not happy with us looking never further from being in government. It's very simple. We've got to win, Jeremy. We can't just talk about it. We've got to change it.
OK, thank you very much, Jeremy Corbyn. Well, to close this discussion.
Owen, I thought we were moving into an area of agreement there. Can I just ask you one question, which I'm sure you will agree with? Do you agree with me? The most instructive shadow cabinet meeting we had was when we went to Dagenham and we had the women strikers from Ford's in Dagenham who themselves had won equal pay and thus won equal pay legislation.
Absolutely.
It was an object lesson to all of us, and it was a great meeting. I'm sure you'll agree with me.
I completely agree.
Thank you.
OK, there we will finish on agreement on that.
Great women.
Right, we've got time for one more. If you can keep this one as brief as possible, please. And very pertinent, as we're here in Cardiff, in Wales. This comes from Kath Hopkins in Cardiff. How does the Labour Party re-engage voters in Wales? Jeremy Corbyn, you'll start with this one, please.
Re-engaging voters by investment in public services, by investment in housing, by investment in health, but above all, investment in job opportunities. Recognising the good work done by the Government of Wales in dealing with the issues of homelessness, in dealing with the issues of ending the internal market within the NHS, helping children through school with breakfast clubs, many other practical ways of support. Not punishing the people of Wales by underfunding the Government of Wales, which is what this government is doing, and also ensuring that the infrastructure investment that's being lost through the European Union, or potentially lost is replaced by a UK government so that we do get the South East Wales Metro. And I would also like to see the Carmarthen to Aberystwyth rail link reopened.
Thank you very much, Jeremy Corbyn.
Let's hear it for Carmarthen.
Okay.
I do it by having a Labour government in Westminster to work with our brilliant Labour government here in Wales. That's the key to it. Because if we had that, we could say, as I want to say, let's give Welsh workers the biggest boost in their wages that we've seen in a generation. Let's have a proper living wage of £8.25 an hour. Tomorrow, by having a Labour government of Westminster deliver it, let's invest in the NHS in Wales through increasing the budget to the Welsh Assembly. It's been cut every year by the Tories. Every single year they've cut our budget and forced us to make cuts within our public services. But the secret to doing all that, my friends, is a Labour government in Westminster to work with Carwyn and our comrades here in Wales. That's how we help Wales.
You both on this thing, as you both mentioned funding and money's important to us all. What is proper funding for Wales? Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, funding in Wales would be sufficient for maintenance of services that are needed in Wales, recognition of the levels of poverty that exist in many of the valley towns, and recognise the effects of 30 years of deindustrialisation ever since the end of the mining industry after the miners' strike in Wales. But it's also about investment in keeping industries, such as the preparedness of government to intervene to ensure that Port Talbot stays open, to ensure that we have a maintenance of the steel industry in Wales, and the preparedness to take a public stake in it. It has to be fair funding across the whole of the UK. And the transport infrastructure issue in Wales is a massive one. I compliment the Welsh Government what it's tried to do. But quite honestly, it's utterly ridiculous that it's very difficult to travel, other than by car, from north to south Wales because of the inadequacy of the roads and the inadequacy of a rail system that simply doesn't connect one part of the country to the other.
Okay, thank you very much. What is proper funding?
I'd invest massively in Wales. I'd invest an extra £10 billion in infrastructure in Wales over a parliament. We would get our fair share of that £200 billion New Deal. I'd invest an extra £1 billion a year in Wales in resource funding through Wales getting their fair share of the £20 billion of extra taxes that I'd be levying on the wealthiest people in this country. Real concrete proposals to spend real money on our communities. It would allow the Welsh Government to increase spending on the NHS by 4% in every year of the next Parliament. It would allow Wales to surpass the European averages for spending on the NHS, not fall below it, as we're doing right now, but to do all of that, we've got to be a Labour government. Carwyn Jones needs a Labour government at both ends of the M4. We all need a Labour government at both ends of the M4. That's how we end austerity, not by protesting, but by winning in Parliament.
Okay, thank you very much. Time has beaten us, I'm afraid, and we've run out of time for questions. So we'll move on to the final bit of the night this evening, which is to give us your two-minute closing pitches. Why are you the man for the job? We'll start with Owen Smith. 2 minutes then, please, to explain to this audience.
Thank you, Catherine. Well, I think I've been clear tonight. I see that our country is in crisis. It's a crisis that has been long in the making and a crisis that was dramatically compounded by that terrible vote on June the 23rd. We've seen wages collapse. We've seen job security collapse. We've seen the grossest levels of inequality this country has seen in a century. Our NHS is crumbling. Labour's legacy across Britain is being wiped out in this crisis. And at the same time, the Labour Party, when we are at our most needed in Britain, is in crisis ourselves. Divided, and in danger of being defeated. So the answer, my friends, is a Labour government that is ready to govern once more. A powerful, strong opposition to the Tories. A radical, credible Labour government in waiting, ready to implement
a massive investment programme, ready to reindustrialise many parts of Britain, ready to give us the biggest boost to wages, a proper living wage, proper pensions for our hardest working people in public services and in the private sector. What we need is nothing less than the most radical, practical, socialist programme for government that we've seen since 1945. I am clear about that. That's the scale of the challenge we face, and that's the scale of the challenge we must set ourselves. And if you put your faith in me, if you elect me as the leader of the Labour Party, then I will deliver that. I will fight for and deliver the most radical programme we've seen in this country since the great Labour government of 1945. I promise you, I will deliver that, I will unite our party around it, and I will take us back to government.
Jeremy Corbyn, to sum up, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for being here at this hustings. It's been absolutely brilliant. We can win a general election, and we've been winning elections all this year. We won 4 parliamentary by-elections, 3 with a big swing to Labour. We won 4 mayoral contests. We got ahead of the Tories in the local government elections. We lost the general election in 2015, and it was a desperate, awful, bad, sad day. We lost, I believe, because we were not offering a clear enough alternative to the British people. It's not good enough to go on the doorstep and say, we'll make less cuts than they will, we'll have austerity, but it'll be austerity light. You've got to offer something different. A year ago, we were abstaining on the welfare reform bill, which cut £12 billion from the welfare budget. We should have been opposing that bill, and we have now become a party that has a clear economic alternative of something very different. And so, defeating the Tories on the personal independence payments, on the forced academisation of schools in England, and other issues has been something that we've achieved when we've worked together. And this has also brought in a lot of new members to the party. Our membership hasn't just doubled, it's gone up from 200,000 to 540,000, the biggest membership there has ever been. We're a party that is active at all levels within our society and within our community. People are engaged in politics in a way they never were before. In the last election, only 47% of young people voted in that election. I regret that. They are paying the price. We're all paying the price of that. Mobilise and enthuse people, we go a lot further and a lot faster. The 10 points I put forward this morning were about full employment and many other things. But we rebuild to transform. No one, nowhere is left behind. Let us have faith in ourselves, our community, our party, and our ability to deliver real social justice all across this country.
Thank you. Thank you all for your warm responses to both speeches to end there. Diolch yn fawr iawn I chi gyd. Can I thank Jeremy Corbyn and Owen Smith for opening the hustings here in Cardiff this evening? Can I thank you in the audience and you at home for sending your questions in and for a great debate? Thank you very much. Diolch yn fawr.